Welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payment Journal podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. And at the risk of sounding like a movie trailer announcer, in a world where individuals can create many digital identities and even synthetic identities, KYC is becoming exponentially more important and critical to organizations. And when implemented correctly, KYC drastically reduces your fraud rate as you know the person on the other end is who they claim to be. So to help me with today's episode, I have Dean Nichols, who is the VP of Global Marketing at Jumio, and Tim Sloan, who is the VP of Payments Innovation at Mercator Advisor Group. Now, there's certainly a lot to unpack during this episode, so without any further delay, let's start the show. So Dean and Tim, thank you so much for being on today's episode where we're taking a look at KYCs. Now, Dean, I'd like to start with you. You know, why is it so important to be able to quickly and accurately connect a person's online and real-world identities?
I think there's a number of reasons. I think one of the first reasons is that it's increasingly hard to know if the person on the other end of a transaction is who they claim to be. You can thank all the recent data breaches, you can thank social engineering, you can thank the dark web, but oftentimes when someone claims that they're someone, they often aren't, right? Because there's so much identity theft out there, it's making it increasingly more difficult to know that the person is who they really claim to be.
Yeah, that's for sure. We have even synthetic identities being generated as well as composite identities. And in this pandemic, it just seems like the criminals have been let loose like crazy. The attacks have increased dramatically.
Yeah, I certainly think that that's extremely fascinating, right? In terms of also just what Tim was talking about there, in terms of just synthetic identities. You know, if it wasn't bad enough where fraudsters would come in and steal someone's identity as a whole, but kind of almost cherry picking what it is that they want to kind of create a synthetic person. I mean, just has to add like a whole nother level of complexity in terms of a, hey, we're going to form validate for XYZ fields, but if you don't really get all of them, like you're not 100% sure if that individual person is exactly who that they claim to be. So kind of moving on to the next question here, Dean, and if we could get your response first, you know, how do identity verification and authentication services protect the ecosystem of businesses?
Well, what we do, and this whole field of identity proofing, if you want to call it that, has really changed a lot over the last 5 years specifically. So it used to be, the old days were, is if I'm Tim and I'm filling out a form to create a new account online, whether it be a banking account or whatever, they would do is ping a database. They might put my name, my address, potentially my social security number, and they're going to ping a database and says, yes, there is a Tim out there in the ether, and therefore you could trust because the person's claiming to be Tim, and because Tim exists in this database, therefore the person presenting kind of these credentials must therefore be Tim. But obviously, again, thanks to all things we've just talked about, you can't trust that all because he's purporting to be someone that he is in fact that person. So the way that we go about doing it, and we're not alone in how we do this, but we actually invented this method of identity verification, is we require the user to provide a copy of a government-issued ID, whether it be a passport or a driver's license or an ID card, take a picture of it either with their webcam or their smartphone, and then take a selfie. What we're doing is making sure the ID is legitimate and authentic. And then with the selfie, we're making sure the person behind that ID is the same person in possession of it, is who they claim to be. Then we're also layering it on top of that, something known as liveness detection, to make sure they're actually physically present and not holding up a picture of a picture, for example, or using a deepfake video, for example, to pretend that, to consensually get around the selfie requirement. And so by layering in that level of verification, you know, payments companies can have a much higher level of assurance that that person is who they claim to be.
And I think it's moving beyond just financial institutions that need to actually consider what level of KYC they're going to go through to identify the individuals joining their environment. Value goes up. You have shopping sites that are enabling consumers to spend hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars, and knowing exactly who it is who's opening those accounts can be very important. So we can see this need for identity management spread into more and more environments?
Yeah, the one thing I was going to add is it's virtually any environment where you need to establish digital trust. So we're talking about, you know, there's banking and payments, but it also applies to dating, right? If you're going to create an online profile, is the person creating the profile who they claim to be? It goes into online gaming and gambling. It's increasingly virtually most websites out there want to have higher levels of assurance and higher levels of digital trust. And it requires that you go through some of these extra hurdles to really know the person is who they claim to be.
So, Dean, you brought up in terms of just, you know, being able to take a picture of your government ID or some kind of other form of identification that's been issued to the person there to be able to upload it. But as a consumer, what can you kind of what can you say to me to kind of help ease my mind in terms of knowing that, OK, by me taking a picture of this, that picture and that data that's getting sent across over for that verification is actually secure? Because as a consumer, I would kind of be a little bit leery or hesitant of saying, okay, I'm going to take this picture and send it along to here and hopefully it's secure. So what can you kind of do to like assure the consumer on that end that picture or that information that they're sending along is actually going to be secure?
Yeah, there's a few different answers to that question. So first of all, is we can say that all the data is encrypted in transit and at rest, meaning that as soon as the picture is taken and sent over the internet, it's being encrypted in transit. And then when we store it, as we evaluate it, it's being encrypted there as well. And that provides some level of assurance. Another level of assurance is that we're one of the few providers that's actually PCI compliant. So normally people think of PCI compliance as if you're gonna handle a credit card, all vendors that handle credit card information have to be PCI compliant, and they essentially get vetted by a third party, which is what they call PCI DSS compliance. And it requires a lot. They essentially will audit your operations. They'll audit how you're protecting data in terms of encryption standards. And so essentially, our entire operations has been audited by a third party, and they've essentially granted us kind of PCI compliance status. And so that provides a level of trust. The other way to kind of spin the question, though, and I think this is important, is if you're creating a bank account and they're asking you as part of the account setup process, look, we're going to ask you to create a bunch of secret questions and answers, like what is your mother's maiden name? What is your first car you drove? I would be inherently suspicious of that because obviously this is knowledge-based authentication. And the reason, if that's how you, Mr. Bank, are going to be protecting my account is through knowledge-based authentication questions and answers, then I already have a level of mistrust of you because those questions can be hacked, guessed. And you know, when you think about some of the larger data breaches we've seen over the last few years, a lot of those secret questions and answers are already out on the dark web. So a fraudster can actually answer those questions before faster than a legitimate user can. Right. So part of you have to realize, am I giving up some privacy by providing a picture of my ID and taking a selfie? Yes. Is this in my own best interest? So a fraudster can't go into my account, do an account takeover, and literally drain my bank account dry because it's been protected by weak forms of authentication. You know, you have to weigh that. You have to do your own kind of cost benefit analysis. But for me personally, I would much rather know that my bank account is being protected with some kind of biometrics, or the person wanting to do a $15,000 wire transfer to the Cayman Islands, that they have to have my selfie to pull that off. That gives me a lot more comfort, and I'm willing to give up some of my perceived privacy in order to do that.
There gets to be some confusion between KYC, understanding who the individual is you're talking to or dealing with, and authentication, which is then tagging that individual so that you can recognize them when they come back a second time or third or fourth time without having to go through KYC again. And then there's digital identity, which is an attempt to share that KYC information so that if I've been authenticated by my bank as actually being Tim Sloan through a KYC process, that could be shared with other sites so that they wouldn't have to put me through the same KYC effort. And as a result, a lot of people start to get wrapped around the axle on the differences between all of this. The KYC has to be done right, or everything else is moot.
Absolutely. And just to kind of piggyback on that comment, I think there's a great deal of confusion between identity verification up front when the account is getting created and the ongoing authentication. And historically, you've had different stakeholders that care about those two pieces of the puzzle, and you've often have to use two or three different vendors to make all of that happen. I think what's emerging now is, and this is really a best practice, at least according to Gartner, is that if you're going to use, for example, a biometric when you're creating and verifying the account up front, then why not use that same biometric when you're going to, for ongoing authentication? And again, authentication could be anything from a simple account login, right? But it could also be authenticating a high-risk transaction like a password reset or the $15,000 wire transfer to the Cayman Islands. Like, so for example, in our use case, what we do is because we capture that selfie, during the selfie taking process, we actually create what we call a 3D face map from the selfie. It's literally made up of 100 frames from a video that when you're taking the selfie, we create that face map. And so the great thing about that is fast forward 3 months from now, and I want to do some kind of risky transaction. Instead of having them go through the entire KYC process all over again, all they need to do is essentially take a selfie again. And we're going to create a new 3D face map from that, essentially that selfie video. And we compare instantaneously from the one that was created at enrollment. And instantaneously, we're giving, you know, the financial institution or the payments company a thumbs up or thumbs down that this person performing the high-risk transaction is, in fact, with a high degree of assurance, the same person as the account owner. Right? So the worlds of identity proofing and verification and authentication are blurring, right? They're blending. And I think we're seeing a lot more of that happen, you know, in 2020.
Absolutely. We have EMV 3D Secure, which enables a bank to force a authentication of the end user when they make a purchase with their card. We have financial institutions that are using different authentication techniques across every channel. And these are all going to be consolidating pretty quickly, probably around the mobile handset biometric.
Excellent. Now, I know that Jumio has a great ebook that's called The ABCs of eKYC. And Dean, I was hoping that perhaps you could kind of unpack some of the highlights of it for our audience here.
Sure. So I think probably a good chunk of your audience understands KYC. It's really, you know your customer. It refers to the process that institutions have to use to verify the identity of their customers, right? And it's all about performing due diligence and really determining the risks that these individuals present in terms of illegal activity and potential financial crime, right? So KYC has existed for literally decades. What's new to the process is often it's been done with manual review, with people sitting in back offices, checking IDs, going through a bunch of due diligence steps. Now, so much of this can happen online, and it's not just about the KYC part of it. It's also about the AML checks, right? The AML screening. So part of KYC is making sure that the person you're about to onboard as a new customer aren't on any kind of what they call PEPs or sanctions list. PEPs is short for politically exposed persons, but it also includes people that are on any kind of government watch lists, right? So increasingly, a lot of this is getting automated and digitized. And for example, the financial institutions that had a lot of this in place prior to COVID-19, they're in a much better position to onboard new customers as opposed to having them marched into a branch office, which are now closed, right? So they can keep adding new customers and keep kind of essentially their own demand gen engine moving forward without having to force people to come into a branch office. So I think what eKYC is allowing is a much faster, more automated, and frankly, I think even a more secure and reliable method of knowing your customer than the way we've done it in the past.
When you start doing this for multiple banks, as Jumio has, it means you're working with multiple compliance officers, every one of which is validating and testing that solution. And it shows a certain amount of professionalism to be able to get through all of those financial institutions' hurdles with a single product. Congratulations.
Thank you for that, Tim. And it is true. I mean, it's we're dealing with some of the biggest financial institutions on the planet, and we work with a good chunk of the new digital challenger banks. And what's kind of interesting about this COVID-19 is that a lot of the large traditional banks that really haven't wanted to engage with us in the past are now starting to knock on our doors now. And frankly, it's taken COVID-19 and a lot of forced digital transformation for that to happen. But I think in parallel to that, there's a lot of regulations around the globe that are easing up, that are allowing EKYC. So a lot of times you'll need essentially the monetary authorities in the respective countries to essentially bless this form of these KYC checks and allow them to be performed digitally. And now we're seeing more and more governments open up to that prospect around the globe.
Sure, the virus is out of the barn.
Yeah.
Yes, it certainly is there. One of the things I'd like to talk about with you, Dean, before we wrap things up here is potentially could you kind of go into some of maybe Jumio's other benefits to their end-to-end identity verification solutions that we might not have talked about on today's episode?
Sure. I think when it comes to, we're one of the few providers out there that do offer an end-to-end identity verification and authentication solution. I think increasingly now that's coming. That's becoming more and more important. The way that we essentially invented doing identity verification, which is the pairing of a government-issued ID and a corroborating selfie, is becoming much more in vogue. It's being endorsed by Gartner as the database types of checks are no longer really cutting it, you know, thanks to the dark web and these recent data breaches. I think for any company looking at the growing number of companies that provide a similar service, what's often unclear is how do I compare vendor A to vendor B? Because a lot of your websites look like you're saying the same thing. What I would tell them and what I would tell your audience is that a lot of it comes down to the quality of the decision that we're rendering. It comes down to, there's really two ways to measure quality of service. One is how well do you let the good actors in? And again, in most cases, 98% of your customers are good customers. And you want to make sure for those customers, it's a smooth and it's a simple process for creating a new account. But for the 2%, right, how well do you do at capturing the 2% that are fraudulent, right? And it makes sure that they don't create accounts and pollute your ecosystem, right? So we have a tagline on our website, you know, loved by users and loathed by fraudsters. And that's all about developing a whole set of processes that makes the process for a good user quick, intuitive, and super easy. But highly, highly accurate. So you have a much higher level of assurance. But at the same time, building in all the safeguards to ensure that we're stopping the bad actors at the front door, right? So we're looking at the ID itself. We do 20 different kinds of checks against that ID to make sure the ID itself is legitimate. Making sure that we leverage a lot of what we call informed AI to really automate as much of the process as we can. So we use AI, for example, to check the ID in many cases to make sure that it's a legitimate ID and conforms with all the security features of a given ID template. We're leveraging AI to make sure the person in the selfie matches the picture on a government-issued ID. We're leveraging AI to improve the speed at which we conduct all of these tests. So we're now less than 30 seconds. We even just launched a new fully automated solution that leverages no human beings whatsoever. That's also new as well. But ultimately, it comes down to really two things. How well experience you create for good users, and how well are you at catching the bad actors? And I think we have 10 years of experience refining both sets of processes. And I think that's really our competitive advantage. It's really the quality of the verifications we perform and the accuracy behind those decisions.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Dean and Tim, for taking the time today for speaking to me about KYC, and I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.